Welcome to the broadcast. This is the 20th edition of The Truth is No Defense. Unless an appeals court intervenes, Glenn Miller's bid for Congress is finished. Despite being denied access to the ballot, Mr. Miller's audacity has furthered white nationalist sentiment in this country. In Alabama, a Mr. Larry Darby, another white nationalist, ran for Attorney General, receiving 43% of the vote in the Democratic primary. The publicity garnered by these efforts is priceless. And in Mr. Darby's case, since he got on the ballot, proves that white nationalist issues can make headway with the public, despite antagonism by the controlled media. Given demographics and social trends, a flourishing electoral landscape for candidates running on a white nationalist platform ought to develop. As whites diminish in number, as they are increasingly murdered by non-whites, outbred, and numerically overwhelmed by the flood of non-white immigration, the whites which remain, by the fact of their very existence, must self-evidently be racially conscious. Otherwise, they would have fallen to the genocide campaign underwritten by Jews. Of course, the terrible cost of white racial consciousness in this scenario is a huge reduction in the number of whites, along with increased violence by non-whites directed upon whites. So let's be hard-headed about our situation. Even now, with whites at 70% of the U.S. population, if a wave of white nationalist sentiment swept through America, we must face this fact. A legislative solution to our problem is impossible. Given the power minority factions, or more accurately, racial factions, are afforded by the government, a white nationalist movement, working within the existing two-party process, is likely doomed to frustration and failure. Of course, considering mounting favorability of white nationalist issues, one would expect the corrupt two-party system to preempt sincere white nationalist candidates, with their own bogus candidates paying lip service to white nationalist themes, in order to acquire power and access to wealth. Chain, or Craig Cobb, has rightly described the two-party system as the two wings of a bird of prey. We must understand the political system is rigged. By that I mean it is impossible for a third party or independent party to defeat the joint opposition of the Republicans and Democrats, since they are in fact one body. Given this reality, emergent political trends are then captured, consumed, and eliminated by the corrupt two-party system. Power, along with the objectives of the regime, is preserved. Of course, this suits the two teams fine, since, despite the acrimony, they serve the same interests. Miller wanted to get on one of the team's tickets. They said no. The judge is right. The Constitution says nothing about political parties. The founders didn't like parties, and they thought they had devised a system which might prevent parties from arising. That didn't happen. In Darby's case, had he won the Democratic primary, he would have been defeated in the general election, and had he won that election, he would have been isolated and marginalized. If necessary, the UN Security Council would declare war on Darby and his supporters, claiming they are terrorists. That perhaps is an exaggeration. That's not to say running for office as a white nationalist isn't useful. It is. But let's be clear what the goals are. Surely the goal is not reform of the existing corrupt system, which is an impossible goal. But really, it's the destruction of it, which is possible. Never again must such a beast be allowed to rise. It must be killed, a knife thrust deep into its heart. That is not to say the existing institutions don't have a certain utility. For example, recall the state of politics in the late Weimar period. The two largest parties were the NSDAP, or National Socialists, and the Communists. Both were mortal enemies, but both also hated the Weimar system. When the Reichstag convened a new government in 1933 with the Communists and the NSDAP as the two largest parties, with Hermann Göring presiding as the Speaker of the Parliament, the two factions immediately paralyzed the government, forcing a crisis in the Weimar Constitution, a crisis which caused Hindenburg and his conservative cronies to appoint Hitler to power, to restore order to Germany. Of course, the Communists did not knowingly work with the Nazis. Politics and social conditions had simply degraded in Weimar Germany. The NSDAP used these facts to their own advantage. A similar degradation is occurring in America. Crisis conditions are forming. White nationalists didn't create these conditions, but we can certainly exploit them. White nationalists did not import the poverty and disorder that accompanies the non-white hordes invading this land. We did not sanction the hollowing out of American industry, nor did we create the banking system, which is directly responsible for the crushing levels of national as well as personal debt. Earlier, I said that even with whites reportedly holding 70% of the U.S. population, that if a wave of white national sentiment swept America, a legislative solution to our problems is impossible. Now, let me give you an example. Those familiar with the website betterimmigration.com know the site ranks every member of Congress according to his immigration voting record. If a congressman has a record opposing open borders and mass immigration, he receives an A. If the candidate is open borders and favors mass immigration, then that congressman earns an F. Of course, scores range from A to F. Using the data from the 108th Congress, I simply grouped all congressmen by race, white, black, Hispanic, and Jewish. Then using the information at betterimmigration.com, I assigned a numerical value of 1 for A grades and 5 for F grades. Then I averaged the votes according to racial group. The results showed that blacks, Hispanics, and Jews, as a group, voted uniformly for open borders immigration. In contrast, the white vote was split, about 60-40, a majority of whites voting for stricter immigration controls. As I analyze the numbers further, and I invite you to do the same experiment, I understood that Congress and the lawmaking process could not, even with the current white majority, save America. The solidarity of non-white voting, combined with a minority of whites siding with our racial foes, ensures that America will turn brown. Worse, the number of whites in America is falling, eroding white representation in Congress. These facts dictate radical action. In my case, it convinced me to become a white nationalist and abandon conservative politics, identifying politics exclusively with race. For I understood that civil society, technological progress, and beauty itself cannot be maintained by non-whites. So, what do we do now? First, we have to look at the world as it is. We must accept that our objectives cannot be fulfilled within the framework of existing politics. That is not so radical a statement. At some time, all the founders came to understand this reality. Benjamin Franklin, for example, worked tirelessly to persuade the British government, his government, to reform its policies toward the colonies. Remember, Franklin thought of himself as an Englishman and sought respectability within the English system. Yet at some point, he too understood a revolutionary break was necessary, as of course did Adams, Morris, Washington, Jefferson, and others. So let's continue to speculate about our future now. Somehow, whites must organize. They must organize to the express exclusion of other racial groups, especially Jews. This organization must be implicitly revolutionary, but willing to utilize the existing levers of power within the existing political framework. Yes, such an organization shall be infiltrated with police spies. But this was also true of the NSDAP, and it didn't stop their acquisition of power. As a revolutionary party, the mission must be to replace the existing political framework. In this goal, we might be assisted by the other racial parties, which have already consolidated their position within the existing political framework. But only if we can organize, becoming a player, as the blacks and the Mexicans now are. For example, consider first the Jewish faction, which controls the immigration, media, and banking processes. This by far is the most powerful faction in the government. However, this group is our permanent and everlasting foe, and no alliance is possible with them. However, blacks and Mexicans and other racial groups may assist us in our goals, since they too have an intense hatred for the system. And elements within their race understand Jewish power. Currently, the black and the Hispanic racial groups are using their power in Congress to extort jobs and money from both business and governmental sectors. They don't need us right now, because we aren't organized. Yet, blacks and Mexicans are venal and corrupt, with little or no conception of honor or virtue. If we as whites, putting both our boots on the ground and men in Congress, these groups, too, shall bend to our wishes, instead of the Jews, which currently manage the black and Mexican factions. Yet all this is contingent upon whites organizing as whites. Again, if we fail to organize, a condition the Jew assiduously works night and day to maintain, blacks and Mexicans will have every incentive to keep murdering our vulnerable and defenseless race and acting in accordance with Jewish interests. How we deal, once we are organized, with this massive population of non-whites in our midst is crucial. It is the problem of our time. It is not a problem Nazi Germany or the American revolutionaries had to consider to the extent that we must. So let's think about this problem in a hard-headed way. We need the help of our racial foes. Remember, it was the American revolutionaries of 1776 that turned to France, or more exactly the French monarchy, for assistance. Recall that America at that time was chiefly populated with subjects of the British crown, and recall that treason against the British crown was often punished by torture and death. The American colonists understood they needed allies, money, men, and arms if they were to succeed. For this reason, they risked it all and sought allegiance with France. Seeing the world as it is, if our goal is the independence of our race, meaning the ability of whites to govern ourselves, the main impediment is the imperial federal system under Jewish domination, forcing us to live with those we detest. The presence of non-whites is a side effect of a corrupt government. This impediment must be removed, crushing the Washington tyranny, given the current disordered conditions in the white nationalist movement, is a formidable task. So, if we insist on reconquering Florida or California and cleansing the Mexicans and niggers from the entire political unit of the USA, that objective is simply a bridge too far. To some extent, we have to accept certain areas of the United States are lost. Since we don't want to live with non-whites or rule over them, it seems obvious that the price of their cooperation in our struggle must be the soil of California and Florida. And they have it anyway. Again, such a scenario is all contingent upon the existence of organized whites under wise leadership. We must know that any organization will be thoroughly infiltrated with police and Jewish spies. Those piloting such an organization must be men of exceptional virtue and principle, yet capable of strategic thinking and craftiness. These men do exist. They emerge in the midst of all political crises. Washington rose to lead the Americans in the Revolutionary War. Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee in the 1860s. Franco during Spain's Civil War. And, of course, Adolf Hitler. The next Washington or Franco may now be born. We need to train him. This broadcast is about ideas. If you have constructive criticism, please feel free to comment. I welcome your thoughts. You may see things differently. Things may not unfold as I have suggested they might. Yet, the political trends are firmly established. I think the situation for our race is worse than even most white nationalists believe. Just visit your local government school or shopping mall. You'll see. Whether whites mount an effective resistance to our genocide or meekly surrender before the onslaught, life shall become increasingly nasty, brutish, and short. Such are the facts in a multicultural society.